And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. Just approaching 4 minutes past nine, and you're very welcome along to Tuesday's 9 till noon show. It is the 12th of March, 2024. How are you all keeping out there? I do hope you're very well wherever you're listening to us on air across the Northwest and across the country and the world online. Just to remind you how you can stay in touch with us, of course, 086 60 25000. That's if you want to comment on any of the issues or stories we're carrying, or if indeed if you wish to make your own points or pass on your requests or dedications as well. That's 086 60 25000. If you want to voice note your comments as well, feel free to do so, or your hellos for that matter. You can give us a call on the programme too, 07491 25000. Caroline Orr is taking your calls and email comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the show, we offer that service every single day. You can watch on YouTube, on your smart TV or Fire Stick at home. Just go into the app and type in Highland Radio Ireland and we're live right now. Or we're across Facebook as well, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and we're streaming live on X. So welcome everyone watching us on the X platform as well. Right, our next guest will be with us shortly, so we'll crack on with the newspapers this morning. We'll start with the Irish Times. And the government is struggling to contain fallout from the double referendum defeat after public divisions emerged between ministers over responsibility for the failed campaign. In a further sign of disarray, after voters rejected two proposals to change the constitution, anti-hate speech legislation from Minister for Justice Helen McEntee came under attack within the coalition. Fianna Fáil TD Willie O'Dea called for the proposed new laws to be scrapped, criticising the woke gallery and the out-of-touch Greens, citing law and order issues, Mr. O'Dea said, and this will resonate actually with an awful lot of people out there, the Minister for Justice should be focused more on that, i.e., real issues. Not real issues, but, you know, the big issues that people are familiar with. She should focus more on that and less on legislation such as preventing hate crime. Ms. McEntee in New York for St. Patrick's Day did not comment, but there is rising government scepticism about the draft law stalled in the Shannon since June. And I think a lot of this comes down to sort of Middle Ireland, you know, and what normal, you know what I mean when I say that. What your average Joe and Josephine thinks in Ireland, not what the extreme left might think, not what the extreme right might think, but in the middle, those are the people. Now, everyone can claim responsibility for defeating the referendum to the blue in the face, but it is Ireland, Middle Ireland, that voted, made up their minds, made a decision and voted the way they voted. And you would, it would seem, given the fact that most parties actually campaign for yes, yes, that there is, as I've mentioned many times on this programme, a detachment between, you know, Middle Ireland and the powers that be, the decision makers. The finger is not, as you might feel, on the pulse. Well, Fianna Fáil's Lisa Chambers has attempted to distance herself from the catastrophic referendum results by claiming she wasn't involved in the failed Yes Yes campaign. Not fully true, Ms. Chambers. Picture shows Senator Chambers canvassing in Dublin for a Yes Yes vote on February 22, less than 2 weeks before the voters went to the polls. Yesterday, hours after her party colleague Willie O'Dea broke ranks and said he voted no to both, Ms. Chambers also said on national radio that she didn't really engage in the campaign or debates because I wasn't sure what was going on in it, she said. We yet have any contact from any of the main parties in this county sort of pushing back on the referenda as such, but anyway. Okay, on to the Irish Independent this morning. Holiday homes and Airbnb rentals are putting houses in scenic areas beyond the reach of locals, accounting for up to 20% of the housing stock in some areas. I would say in some areas it's 80% rather than 20%, if you go out of town a little bit. This surge in the number of second homes in certain parts of the country is forcing young people to move away and is said to be having a terrible social consequence. An Irish Independent analysis of recently released CSO census data highlights Ireland's holiday home black spots, which have been described as a blight on rural communities. Detractors say that holiday homes offer little to the rural economy and taxation could be the answer. In certain areas, you look out at night time in winter and there is not a light on, where there used to be a little shop, that shop is gone, where there used to be older people and families, no longer there. It's a barren landscape until the Easter holidays or summer kicks in. Well, leading the pack in this trend are two areas in Donegal, Glenties and Milford, where holiday homes account for 28 and 26% of the local housing stock, respectively. Now, if I was thinking, and I'm very interested in your views on this, I'm just reading this from The Independent. If I were looking for two hotspots where there's an awful lot of holiday homes, would you have said Glenties and Milford led the pack, 28% and 26%? I think they're talking about districts here, because this must be the Glenties Municipal District and the Milford Municipal District. That would make more sense, but they don't refer to it as that. They must be looking at local election area figures and not actually identifying that, because it's not the towns of Glenties and Milford. Well, the trend extends to other regions as well. No need for me to read those. The CSO defines holiday homes as dwellings that are only occasionally occupied. Nationally, between 2016 and 2022, there was almost an 8% increase in the number. So whilst the paper's not pointing to it, and I think maybe this is someone Dublin-based that doesn't understand the local geography, they must clearly be talking about local electoral areas, because obviously Glenties would encompass, wouldn't it, you know, much of the west of the county, and also Milford would take in, wouldn't it, the likes of Fanna, Downings, Carrigart, those sort of holiday hotspots. But anyway, not a surprise. Would you like to see a tax to see more of those holiday homes, those second homes, go back into all year round use? What do you think? 086 60 25,000, or is that people's property? That's people's wealth, and they're entitled to do with it what they wish. What's your view? 086 60 25,000. Should they be taxed out of it? Or should people be entitled to do what they want with their property, even if it's lying empty for, you know, 40 weeks of the year? Let me know. Gardaí have formally asked for mob boss Daniel Kinahan to be charged with the murder of a brother of Gerry the Monk Hutch. It has emerged. This is the Irish Daily Mirror. Sources have confirmed to the paper that detectives probing the March 2016 gun attack on Eddie Hutch, 58, at his Dublin home, have sent a file to the DPP, and it contains a recommendation that Kinahan be charged over it. He is over in Dubai, of course, at the moment. That could take up to 6 months, but certainly the net closing, continuing to close. The Irish Daily Star this morning: Britain's Duchess of Cambridge has publicly taken the blame for the manipulated family photograph issued by Kensington Palace, as she issued a personal apology for the confusion. Lots of questions remain to this. I did suspect, if you were listening to the show yesterday, that they would blame sort of amateur photoshopping, and that's exactly what they did do just 2 hours later. In a statement released on social media, Kate said, "Like many amateur photographers, I do occasionally experiment with editing." That being said, why would a picture taken by her and edited by her be sent out to the worldwide press with all the people that are around them, and all the PR people that would surely look at the picture and say there's about 5 errors in this picture, but still they expect people to believe that it was her that took the picture, it was her that edited, and then that was deemed good enough to send to the Associated Press and Reuters and everything else. And finally, a mention of the Oscars. Of course, we covered it yesterday. The paper's catching up this morning. In The Sun this morning, Cillian Murphy is the toast of Ireland after his historic Oppenheimer Oscars victory, with the actor comparing the triumph to Italia 90. And now he's been linked with the James Bond role, which I don't think would be good for his career, actually. I think whilst it might be good financially and for exposure, I think in terms of award winning, it might not suit him. And also, I'm not really sure he fits that. He would fit that part great. But anyway, that's a subjective point of view. And you're very welcome back to the programme. And I welcome into studio Sister Breege McKenna. Sister McKenna, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm very happy to be here.
It's a fleeting visit because we have to get you back for 10 o'clock Mass, but we really appreciate you making the short trip down to see us. How are you keeping, and how are you enjoying your visit to Donegal this time?
I'm enjoying it very much. It's beautiful. It would be nice if it was summertime, but I'm enjoying it. I'm here with Father Pablo giving a mission, enjoying meeting the people.
Yes, indeed. You entered the Sisters of St. Clair at a very young age. Were you called to that, did you feel?
Oh, yes. I have no doubt after 63 years, now going on 64, that it was certainly the best choice. I entered when I was very young, and I went to America when I was 21. And I'm there now 56 years.
In America?
I spend a lot of time on the plane.
I was going to say,
worldwide.
Because you certainly have retained much of your accent. Irish accent.
Florida.
Of course. Now, was it mainly because of the rheumatoid arthritis that you suffered that you went to Florida, or was that a happy coincidence that the warm climate might help you in that regard?
No, Greg, right?
Yes.
No, Greg, I didn't go to America. I tell people, like, you know, people go on mission because they love the Lord and our missionaries were way out all over the world. Well, at 17, I had this disease which I spent in Musgrave Park in Belfast, and I was told I was going to be in a wheelchair, and there wasn't much they could do because, you know, crippling rheumatoid arthritis at 17. But I was in Cass, and a nun came home from Florida because the parish priest there was from Mara Felt, and he was looking for Irish nuns. He didn't have enough. And so there were sisters there, my own congregation. And this nun told me, oh, Florida would be ideal, best place for arthritis. And I went for the sun, not for Jesus, thinking I'm going to get healed. I got there and I thought, this has to be hell. It was so hot. And I was in the old habit and I thought, this is a lie. And so I cried for 2 weeks. I wanted to go home. And the reality was I had no money and I had to stay. I was a nun and I had 56 kindergartners as well as, you know, in the pain. So the doctor told me there was nothing they could do. He'd like to make a guinea pig. So he started experimenting. And at 20, I was on 30 pills a day.
Mm-hmm.
It was a terrible time. But in another way, the Lord brought me there because it was in Florida that I had a wonderful experience where I was miraculously healed.
And before we get to that, so did the heat assist in easing any of the symptoms of arthritis?
No, 20 times worse.
And I can only imagine, too, the humidity. And I can only imagine, too, taking those drugs. It must have had a devastating impact on your digestive system.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one's to counteract the other. You know, I was on heavy doses of cortisone. But, you know, I look back now and I think, you know, when you're in pain, desperate pain, you would, the humidity made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
You'll take anything. You know, so I took everything they gave me. And now I look, my memory, and I was bloated because I was cortisone.
Mm.
But it was 2 years of suffering. But it was worth it to get where I am today.
For sure.
I didn't look for healing and I didn't pray for healing.
So talk to us about this miraculous healing of yours then. And how did it, where were you?
Yeah. Well, you know, Greg, I entered young. So I loved religious life. And I have to say, I thank God every day. I entered the Sisters of St. Clair. And I enjoyed going through the novitiate. But did I really know the Lord? I knew about him because everybody went to Mass where I was from. We practiced. And it was when I went to America. You know, the Americans are very expressive. So they'd see a young nun and they'd be saying, oh, you must love Jesus a lot to give up so much.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think, well, I don't love him that much. I mean, I do my job and I am happy in religious life and that. But then a point comes where I say it's like selling a product. If you're not really convinced, you don't market well things if you're not really convinced of what you are. And I start to realise that I would be foolish at my age to spend my whole life as a nun when at least if I was married, I'd have children, I could have a husband. And I made a decision, which I tell all your listeners, best decision I ever made. I thought there has to be more to Catholicism and religious life and I'm going to find it. So I went away on retreat and I didn't ask for it. I didn't think that I was worthy to be healed. Who believes that, you know, miracles happen? But I did ask. I said, I want to meet the person of Jesus as a person, not as, because you're committed to not a church or an institution or a bishop or anything. You're committed to Jesus.
That's in different words, is that you needed convincing proof in
no,
a simple
I didn't
word?
Need,
like just
I,
that you needed.
I just needed I needed to be in love with the person that I had a ring on my finger. Mm. And that's all I prayed for.
Okay.
And that, I was on Sunday morning in 1967. No, 70. I was 3 years there. And at 9:15 on Sunday morning, all I said was, you know, Jesus, I don't know if I'll persevere. Lots of people were leaving priesthood and religious life. I said, Jesus, please reveal yourself. I would love to fall in love with you, to have some zeal. Because you need zeal for if you're doing this kind of work, because it's not all easy. And it doesn't change your life, and you don't get attracted, being attracted to in the opposite sex or whatever as a young 23-year-old girl. Very normal. But it takes more than just having an idea. So I said, Jesus, I just want to know you. I would love to be convinced. I'd love to fall in love with my faith and being a nun. It's no point in being a sister if I'm not a proof that you exist and how I act and everything. And a hand touched my head, and I thought the priest came over. So I opened my eyes to look at the priest, and the next thing, I'm being healed. And I had these acid raw sores from gout from the result of the medication left. I jumped up, and you know, this is going back in the early 70s. I mean, it's not usual to jump up on the church and start shouting, Jesus, I love you, I believe, and me a nun. And the man beside me said, are you all right, sister? And at that moment, Greg, everything in my life changed. I was completely free from pain. I fell in love with the person, Jesus. And since that time, the one thing that has kept me going is I spend a couple of hours every day in adoration. And I thought that I was just going to be teaching and doing things. But
so in that instant, you were completely healed.
Completely, totally transformed.
Because, of course, it wouldn't just be the fact that you'd feel better. There's with gout and what have you, there something physically is happening. So that had to be reversed in that moment for you to have that freedom.
I went to see the doctor on the Monday after, and the doctor cried. He was a Presbyterian, a lovely, lovely man. And he was saying to me, because he was elderly, and he kept saying, I'd love to help you as a young sister, because mm-hmm. he saw the pain I was in. And with the humidity and no air conditioning. We didn't have any air conditioning. So you can imagine the humidity in Florida in those summer months. And he said to me, I would love to take the credit. He said, I'd be famous if I could say that I cured you. But he said, I too believe in Jesus.
But how do you carry that then as a young person, okay? Because, you know, like it was a personal experience for you, but others saw it. Very quickly, people start, you know, hearing about it and hearing your story. And of course, you'd want to tell it because...
No, I didn't want to tell
did
it.
Did you not?
No, because I was afraid of my life of healing. Because in Florida, we had a lot of, you know, big, huge tent revivals and very well-known preachers, you know. I thought, a Catholic nun, it's not for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't tell anybody except my congregation.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell the children's school because we'd be afraid the parents would think it was contagious.
Mm.
So I was excited.
But initially it was a burden. Not a burden.
It wasn't
but
a burden. Oh, no, it was great.
It was fantastic for you. But, I mean, you had to process what this meant.
Oh, yes.
You know, what this meant to your life.
Well, I did. And I came back to the convent and I went to school and people kept saying that knew me, oh, you're going to come down off the cloud. You know, we say, face reality, you're not going to be up in that cloud. And I did. And then it was 6 months later when I had an experience where... on Pentecost, I was born on the feast of Pentecost, mm-hmm. which is good. 6 months later, the Lord spoke to me at adoration. He told me I had the gift of healing. And I told him, Jesus, I don't want it. Keep it yourself. I wanted nothing to do with it. I was a very reluctant candidate. But the Lord, well, if you're open to him, he'll keep knocking. And I have to say that in those early days, I asked for proof. I kept saying, Jesus, give me a sign. And an Episcopal Anglican minister met me in California. I went out to go to summer school. I told nobody about this experience in the chapel. And he looked at me. He said, never spoke to a Roman Catholic nun, but you have a gift. When are you going to use it? And I thought, now, how would he know? I'm a Catholic. He's Presbyterian. You think he told me Episcopal?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it happened. I went to college. I got all these signs. And then one day the Lord showed me. It's very easy in any commitment, to make a commitment until you're challenged to be a fool in my work, because I give my life as a bride away to my father left me at the altar. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, when this challenge comes, would I accept this gift? Would I accept this kind of a life? And I had to say that it wasn't until he showed me that I had a private room in my life, which said private property, don't enter. And that's my reputation, what people think of me, what the neighbours are going to say, what the nuns are going to say. And you come to a point and you say, who did I say yes to? So
I presume you can't heal everyone that you come in contact with, and you know, you will get people that are, it's just that the very last hope is perhaps someone like you can heal them.
Greg, how is that? I don't heal anybody. I just work for Jesus.
Okay, I get you. But Jesus works through you, presumably. Oh. But can we understand? Maybe we can't understand how. Perhaps maybe you can. Through Jesus, through you, offer healing to some, but maybe not others. Like how?
I know what you're trying to ask.
How do we try and understand
what happens
that?
To those who are not healed?
Yes,
what happens,
exactly.
You know,
because we want answers to everything, but there isn't yes. answers to everything yes. either.
Well, you know, that's the great thing that for me, I don't talk about healing all the time. When I pray with people, I'm convinced in my own life that prayer changes people, not God. Not everybody. I've never told a person in all, I'm 52 years worldwide now traveling. And as a Catholic, you must remember that I'm a Catholic nun. So I preach a lot on the Catholic faith, because I say to Presbyterians, Lutherans, whoever you are, be the best you can. If I'm a Catholic nun and I go to Mass every day, then I have to be the best. And so I speak a lot about the Eucharist and I see miracles. I mean, we just came back from Indonesia. We saw a woman completely healed of cancer of the throat. I never saw her. But the preaching of the gospel has the power to do that. Now, when I pray with people, yes, I've seen marvellous healings, but the Lord revealed to me that I could very easily become a celebrity, a false god. People will come to me but not seek the Lord. There's all kinds of money-making and all kinds of stuff that goes on. It's a very easy thing for Satan to use, because of the attached to it. Like, people would call me up in the beginning and say, how much does it cost to be healed? Mm-hmm. And people would come to me, terrible lives, looking. Now, it was then when I went to Lourdes and I said, there must be, Our Lady, please help me. And it was then that I got this great experience where I went to Mexico, to the garbage dumps of Mexico, and I saw miraculous healings happen right in front of my eyes at Mass. And that's when I realise my mission is to point to Jesus, is to tell Catholics, as a Catholic nun I'm speaking, and I respect everybody's faith, but as a Catholic, you have to be 100% if you say you're Catholic. And that's where the problem comes in. You know, if you're only going to church, but any church, but you don't have some zeal. So I do a lot of preaching in the first years in stadiums. I went all over Latin America, Asia. I've been in about 100 and some countries with Father Kevin Scallon, who is from up in Fermanagh. Now I work with a Spanish priest, and we see miracles all the time of conversions. I go to prisons. I have an old prisoner in Florida, and I went first to the prison to speak on death row in 1976, mm-hmm. and I still go to see him. He's in his 80s. He's a saint, you know. Kind of healing.
You'd be in Knock regularly, I take it, because there's a number of people messaging in saying that they love to go down, and when you're in Knock each year, and full of praise for you. I would love to keep you here, but unfortunately,
I'd love to stay with you, but
I have to let you go. Yeah. We appreciate you coming down, Father John Joe, coming down with Father John Joe as well. In about half an hour, there's morning mass and mission talks, evening mass and mission talk. That's later today. The theme is prayer and the power of the Holy Spirit. This is in St. Michael's Church, Creasla, by the way. It's for a Lenten mission until the 13th of March, which is tomorrow. And tomorrow, morning mass and a mission talk. There's an evening mass, mission talk and Eucharistic healing, themed the Eucharist, the source and summit of our faith. Thank you for squeezing us into your incredibly busy schedule, Sister Breach. It's been wonderful having you on the show.
Thank you so
and,
much.
And I pray
for your great work too. I love radio, so I'm so grateful to get this opportunity.
Thank you so much. Okay.
God bless you.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
That's Sister Breege McKenna. We'll be back with more shortly. Okay, again, thanks very much to Sister Breege for calling down to visit us there. Councillor Michael McClafferty, an independent, of course, joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Greg. Morning, listeners.
Right, we're back talking about planning on the N56. What's your comments?
The comment is, Greg, I just noticed there this morning and overnight there, there's a lot of talk about the holiday homes and so on, the various mm-hmm. areas. Like, that's done and dusted now, such it is what it is. It's going to get into, it's going to take its own discussions in due course. But my point is, at the minute, they were happy enough to throw out all the holiday homes they wanted in the last 20 years in the earnest anyway. And now the likes of myself and others with family members, extended relations and so on, we cannot get planning, Greg, along the N56 here mm-hmm. in Donegal, along the main road from the mountaintop right through on through to Gwydor, the low Glentish on to Killybegs, etc. And this is not going to get any better. It's actually getting worse. We had a meeting there last Wednesday, and it's turned out now they're basically looking at zero access now onto the N56. Mm-hmm. It's complete madness. And the TDs of the day need to stand up. They need to get together in Donegal, and they need to get into the Dáil and shake it to the foundations for the constituents in Donegal. And also I'm appealing today as well, as I have done before and I'll do again, but to my fellow 36 county councillors as well, to get behind me and others that are pushing for this. We cannot allow a county development plan, Greg, to go ahead in May without some sort of relaxation on the N56. We need that.
But it's the bottom line, regardless of what the council, and you're not on your own in terms of saying, look, we need to be able to build in certain parts of Donegal. The bottom line is though, this is a Dublin decision. Regardless of what you as 36 councillors sit around and decide, there's someone in Dublin actually makes the final call whether or not this aligns with the National Development Plan.
Yes, Greg, you're absolutely right. It's the civil service in Dublin. The civil service in Dublin are the problem that have done this. Well, actually, back in Leo Varadkar's time, that's when it happened. He was Minister for Transport. Going back that far, he allowed it to happen that time. But we have it in Donegal, even though we can't change things in Lifford, we still can stand up and be counted in Lifford and make a stand that we are not supporting the County Development Plan. Because regardless, Dublin want that County Development Plan passed in May. By hook or by crook, they want that passed in May. So we as Donegal County Councillors have a chance now to stand with the public, stand with the people, stand with constituents, stand with rural Donegal, West Donegal and so on, and take that stand and do not back that plan and just get on to the national airwaves, RTE and everything else if they want to view it.
Good luck getting on to RTE to talk about rural development in Donegal. But just in relation
and
to
thank
the... No, that's fine. But just in relation to the holiday homes and the second homes, mostly holiday homes we're talking about in the Glenties and Milford municipal districts, You would know areas close to you, Michael, that were buzzing one time with families, you know, three generations in the same area, you know, kids cycling around the place and all that type of stuff. And now they've become effectively like wastelands in the winter. All the houses are there, but the lights aren't on. Little shops that used to be there are gone, you know, and then it's a struggle to keep shops and post offices opened in these areas. Do we need to start looking at repopulating these areas, however we do it, which probably means taxing people out of their holiday homes? Maybe that's what some people are suggesting. Or I think you said right at the beginning that fight has been lost now. Has it been lost, or should we try and encourage these houses back into all year round living?
Well, Greg, it's going to be very hard to encourage them. First of all, it's going to be very hard to encourage them into all year round living because they are what they are. They are holiday homes. There, people come here for the Easter, summer, Halloween, whatever, Christmas time, New Year. The majority of them are holiday homes like that. There's another handful through them here and there, dotted through the place, the rentals and so on. You know, various reasons, and that's what it is. But as for getting things repopulated, the only way we're going to get the areas repopulated, Greg, is to get planning in the N56. The reason areas are getting depopulated at the moment now, particularly in Western Donegal, McLentis area, and so on, and probably even to be fair, around your own area there, the Kenny as well, not as noticeable because it's run through a town. People are being forced away. That is the reality of it. There's lack of jobs, there's lack of infrastructure here at the moment, and people are being forced away. You hear so many times now, even thankfully and fair play to the companies we do have here actually working at the minute, operating, still successfully operating as such. But there's some of them, they still can't get workers, Craig, and they can't get workers for the simple reason. People can't get accommodation, they don't want to come here. We had a JPC meeting there on Friday as well, Greg, in Lifford, and they asked the newly appointed Chief Superintendent, Goretti Sheridan, as well. I said, look, I know it's outside your remit as such, yeah, in relation to the roads, but it's whenever you yourself and the chiefs and the superintendent are gathered up, you might try and make a point. You're talking about, like, she mentioned herself as well about lack of accommodation for Gardaí and so on. The lack of accommodation is going to be there going forward because we can't get the houses. So any houses are rented at the minute, there's no space left, they're all taken up. People around about me here with families, with kids and so on, they're on to be steady looking for houses themselves, both off the council and private rentals, and they can't get it.
And the truth is along the M56, it's actually going to be even more difficult going forward, potentially, for people to build on their own land and what have you. Right, but again, I think you as councillors will come together and send a message to Dublin. It's just whether that message in Dublin is heard about, you know, the future development of this region. The bottom line is we've seen with the closure of the health centres in Churchill and in Kilmacrenan and bussing people to Milford, you know, it's death by a thousand cuts. That's another service taken out of rural Ireland, in inverted commas. And if you track them over time, it's all about pushing us to the more urban areas. A few areas have been picked out, it would seem. Buncrana, Milford, Donegal Town, Ballyshannon, Ballybuffet, Stranoller, you know, and the rural part of Donegal is going to become, as the film says, you know, no country for old men.
That is going to happen, Greg, and that is what's going to happen. But again, it's happening before our eyes, yes, but it's happening because the Dublin government are letting it go that way, that they don't give a damn about Donegal or any other rural county along the western seaboard. And this is the problem. I work in a shop in Dunfanaghy, as you know, centre, Boyce Centre down there. There was a notice up on the notice board in Boyce Centre for a very important healthcare worker that we all may be reliant on any day at all. That notice up there for 3-4 months looking for accommodation locally. Mm-hmm. See, the person in question couldn't get it, Greg. She was stationed locally. She's moved on now because she couldn't get accommodation. Like, this is the crazy thing about it. We're not going to get nurses, doctors, guards, frontline workers and so on here, or even in general, anybody at all to come here that's not here at the minute. But the Kenny Hospital is going to suffer. All the Garda stations through the place are going to suffer. We're all going to suffer accordingly because we can't get things sorted and we can't get accommodation. If you were a doctor or a qualified physician or whatever in the medical side, would you stay in the medical side? Because that's important across the board to everybody, regardless who you are. You're looking at Donegal now to come, particularly say you want to work out at the Kenny Hospital. If you can't get accommodation, Greg, you're not going to be going there. If you're from the country, you may want to live out in the country rather than...
Okay, but just to be clear, I am a big fan of people being able to do whatever they want to do with their own property, but there is an irony in that, you know, that person that you talk of looking for accommodation in the Dunfanaghy area, if you throw a sort of 10-mile radius, if you throw a 10-mile radius blanket over... that area, there's thousands and thousands of houses that are only occupied for about 4 to 6 weeks a year. You're okay with that?
I'm not okay with it, Greg. No, of course I'm not okay with it. I'm not okay with it, but the problem is, it is people's private property as such, they'll be holding home or otherwise. It is their private property. And the reality is, until some policy comes into place or some conversation happens with these people with those types of houses, there's nothing I or you can do.
But what would you like to see, you see? This is the problem with politics, Michael, and I mean this with absolute respect. Everyone's okay to talk about the stuff that's popular, right? But as soon as you start getting into something that's a little bit complicated and potentially unpopular, no one wants to talk about it. We saw that with the referendum. You know, everyone after the fact saying, oh, well, I says no, no. But in advance, they were saying yes, yes. I mean, the real tough conversation for councillors is really, is it not? You know, how do we internally try and get some of this housing stock or more housing stock to the people that need it? You know what I mean? We can't shirk that responsibility because it might be a little bit controversial. I'm not saying you are, but you know what I mean?
The public are a wee bit tired
of that stuff now. You know, let's talk about the stuff that's, you know, and people have done really well out of this. Not you again, Michael, but, you know, let's talk about the stuff that, you know, resonates well with the public. And, you know, or when you want to talk about something controversial, everyone runs for the hills.
Well, I'm not running for no hills, Greg.
No, you have never run for the hills.
I get it. Thank you for saying that. On two counts, first of all, I stood to my ground there on the referendum and I voted no, because I believe it's the right thing to do. Secondly, on the holiday home slash house end of it that's not being used, I believe there should be some sort of policy brought into place to pull those people in and ask them what's happened here. You're not using your house and so on. You know, is it available for renting? And you, there needs to be a policy slash law put in place. If you're not living in your house a reasonable amount of time over the year, and especially now when we are in a housing crisis, they need to either look at surrendering, selling their house to the local authority if they wish to do that, selling it altogether, or else there should be a law put in place to end up renting the house at least so many months of the year, some level of degree. Anyway, Greg, I'm not sure exactly how to phrase it properly, mm-hmm. but there needs to be something put in place like that. Anyway, definitely going forward, a better thought out thing, more than just doing now at the quick spur of the moment. But there needs to be something done on that going forward, and I certainly wouldn't hide behind that at all, to be quite honest.
All right, thank you very much, Councillor Michael McClafferty there. Now, it's not he or I really that's calling for this. In the papers today, we read that holiday homes and Airbnb rentals are putting houses in scenic areas beyond the reach of locals, accounting for up to 20% of housing stock in some areas. And this is leading to some calls for increased taxation on these type of properties. Dermot is a holiday home owner in beautiful Inishowen. Hi, Dermot.
How you doing, Dermot?
Yeah, Dermot, how are you getting on? Sorry, beg your pardon, I was told different. Right, you've had your holiday home for a couple of decades now. Do you think they're a blight on Donegal's landscape, or they're good for the county and the economy?
Well, that's a silly question, because I think we're an asset to County Donegal.
Mm-hmm.
As is explained to your researcher there, I bought a piece of land in 1996. For £8,000. Now, on today's prices, that was a bloody good price. But to see 2 weeks before I bought it, it was £4,000, right? So it'd gone up £4,000. So somebody made a nice, handsome profit, right? Now, I paid for a field that was a spud field prior to me putting the house on it, right? Now, I rent the house on occasions, and I bring tourism to the Inishowen area, right? Now, not only me, but loads of people bring tourism, and that brings money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there's a housing shortage in Donegal, it's central government's fault, not northerners who have holiday homes. And to see the 8,000 that I give for my piece of land, now, I probably couldn't buy it for less than 70,000. But see, my money, it went to somebody in Donegal.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's uncle, somebody's daddy, somebody's mommy, somebody's sister had £8,000. That went into the exchequer or went into the economy, that wouldn't have been there. So my point would be, stop blaming people who are coming and bringing tourism to the area, right? Because tourism is the way forward. Now, I live in Derry, and there's no industry coming to Derry. The cavalry is not coming. The British and the Assembly are not sending employment to Derry. And tourism is the way for us to make money and get serious about it. And Donegal is one of the most beautiful places in the world. So let's capitalise on what we have and bring tourists lock, stock and barrel to Donegal. Stop whinging at people who have bought land and are bringing tourists. Well, I don't see the logic. And this man telling us to start taxing homeowners. I'm a northerner. I'm from southern Perth, so County Cavan and County Leitrim. I'm as Irish as you. I pay all the taxes that are asked of me on that house. So I pay as much tax, as much the exchequer, as anybody around me.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, Jeremy, there's been no anti-Northerner in inverted commas sentiment on this programme. I did not honestly even consider that it was the majority owned by Northern Irish. I actually didn't know that if that's true information. And I think most people listening would not like an overreach by any government, north or south, on private property, which yours is private property. Okay, listen, German, thanks for that. I appreciate it. I really do. German, thank you. Brian, hello. Brian, what's your view?
Hello. Just you had mentioned earlier there in passing that you had a great respect for private property.
Yes.
And people's right to own what they own. I just wanted to point out that, much to my surprise when I first read it, in the Catechism of the Catholic Church under the Seventh Commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," private property is dealt with there in the very first few lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an absolute, you know, that when required, private property can be jettisoned and things can be reorganized. I'd also like to point out that in Buncrana there, a great deal of land that is zoned for housing is owned by a small number of people, and they're sitting on it in preference to having money sitting depreciating in the bank. They're sitting on land.
Are you against that, Brian? Right, you know? Do you think that... would you be in favour of if there is a housing shortage and abundance of property that the government intervene to match the property with those that need it, even if it is against the will of the private property owner?
Yeah, I don't know how it should be organised, but it's been done elsewhere, I'm sure, and it has to be done. It's not a matter of am I in favour of it. It's common sense. It has to be done. It's ridiculous that young people can't get houses. And they're not looking for mansions. They're just looking for, two or three bedrooms and a way of living and a bit of a garden. That should be possible in a place as sparsely populated as Donegal. And another point, I've been to Switzerland and I've been up on the mountaintops there and looking around. Houses are scattered far and wide. They're not grouped in urban areas like they seem to be required here, you know. Why don't they send some of the planners on a wee holiday, a wee junket over to Switzerland and see how the most prosperous country in the world organises itself? It doesn't seem to have a problem with houses scattered through the countryside.
So, Brian, would you be in favour then of this tax that was introduced, you know, on land zoned for development? There's a tax on that now, and I presume it is to sort of make it unattractive to hold on to it like you talked of as an investment. Are you in favour of a tax like that brings that kind of property available for general housing?
I'm not in favour of big government or taxation or that type of thing, but I would respect what they have in some countries like little Andorra there. You're not allowed, you won't, as a foreigner, you won't be allowed to buy a house in Andorra and lots of other countries in the world. They just don't allow non-resident people to get a house there. You know, it's not a matter of taxation. But look, I'm not a councillor or anything like that. I don't know the ins and outs of it. I just want to point out the obvious. Private property is not an absolute, and other countries have no problem with scattered housing.
Could you explain to me, though, Brian, because I want to understand what you're saying. When you say private property is not an absolute, what does that mean, just in layman's terms, so I understand what that sentence means?
Right. If I own 10 acres and people around me are living in hovels or caravans, that land can be taken off me by the organising authority in the country, in that area. It can be taken off me, simply repossessed in the eyes of the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church is the communists regard the Catholic Church as their arch enemy. But the Catholic Church has a balance in its teaching, and that is that private property is not an absolute. It states quite boldly in the Catechism, when you look it up there, the Seventh Commandment, that everything in the world belongs to everybody. Private property is a secondary or a principle of organisation. It's not absolute. And it can, in dire circumstances, it can be changed.
But Brian, and I'm not being argumentative, by the way, and I'm not for a second being anti-Catholic, but does that not mean then we should just be able to walk into parochial houses and churches and take much of the wealth the Catholic Church has and distribute that?
But what do you do that for? We need a Catholic Church.
No, the wealth of the church, Brian, you know.
What is the wealth of the church? It's simply they own graveyards and they own the church properties, which are needed for all sorts of purposes. And they're crucial for the principle of a community, the centre. I mean, Prince Charles, above all people, described the towns of Italy as... organized around cathedrals, and that was his ideal form of urban planning.
Mm.
He thought the small towns of Italy were beautiful in that they were, he described them like the mantle of the Virgin, the perimeters of the towns, you know, around the cathedrals. Rather beautiful image coming from a surprising source.
I didn't think you'd be coming on to talk about Catholicism and quoting Prince Charles, but there we are, or King Charles, or whatever he's called now. Brian, thanks for your time this morning. Take care of yourself. 086 60 25,000. Just before a break, my Lord Greg, what are you planning to do? Can I just say very clearly, I'm not planning to do anything. There's an article in the newspaper today, right, that's talking about potentially taxing, and we've heard it before, Thomas Pringle and others have quite clearly said in the past that we should be putting incredibly heavy tax on properties that are on that are available for Airbnb to get them back in, so it's more attractive for them to be long-term rentals. Can I just say one thing, and I don't use this platform for my own agenda, I don't know, and we're having a conversation, so I'm listening to listeners and what they're saying, but I do make some propositions at times to get the conversation going, but I'm not planning on doing anything. But let me read the text in full. My Lord Greg, what are you planning to do? Only for tourists in Falkirk or to Hawke Dunfanaghy Gweedore. There'd be no restaurants open. They are spending in the local shops, bars and restaurants. They're paying their taxes to the Irish government. Can I just say, I love tourists. I love tourist areas. But the conversation is being had down in Dublin. It would be foolhardy of us not to also have that conversation, at least to make people aware of what potentially people are planning. Darren on Facebook, we have says, good morning, Greg. Just because you bought your house, you still don't actually own it. That's what people aren't told. The state can come and take it if it's needed. They just do in other countries. Well, I'm not quite sure they can do it right now. I do know there was legislation being attempted to be passed by people before profit. This is often attributed to the government, that the government were behind the 39th Amendment of the Constitution. This is the right to housing. But it was actually people before profit that wanted effectively for private property to be taken and given to people that need it. Both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael opposed that actually and voted against it, meaning it's very, very unlikely to happen. But it was Deputy Richard Boyd Barrett that brought that proposal forward. But often, and this is what frustrates me and why it's so important everyone does their own research, time and time again I see it on the internet by people saying that it was Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens that were trying to bring this over the line, when it was actually they who opposed the people before profit proposition in that regard. But anyway, rural Ireland is ruined with one-off housing. Large urban centres is the way to go. That councillor is living in the past. And that is a broadly held point of view that, you know, if you live in rural Ireland, I've heard arguments to this, you can't expect to have a bus at your door, broadband at your door, electricity at the door. I don't agree with that, but that's what some people say. Another, we need holiday homes for tourists as all the hotels are full of refugees. Stop attacking private property. We're simply having the conversation because in the papers today, there are calls from certain organisations to start taxing this property. If we don't talk about it now, and then next thing you know, it becomes a proposal, people will say, well, this came out of the blue. We're simply talking about it, not proposing it or not saying it's what should be done. Right, OK, have to take a break for the news and obituary notices. Indeed, I want to take a break for the news and obituary notices. Return, or don't go anywhere for that matter, because we have Community Garda information coming up after 10 o'clock, where you hear the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána. First here every Tuesday morning on the 9 till noon show.